I would like to welcome everyone to the 11th in the continuing lectures, Shiurim, on the reduction of the Babylonian Talmud, the Chasimus HaShas. Last week, of course you have no sense of time anyway, but from my standpoint, last week we discussed what seems to be the overall pattern, how in fact actually the Chasimus HaShas ends in a certain sense what you would call a directed dialectic, which does not in fact actually indicate an empirical psak halacha that one can in fact actually recover. In other words, that's what defines the Chasimus HaShas from the Tekufa of the Rishonim, is that the Rishonim constitute in a certain sense, can look at the different texts and put together what one would understand to be the objective halachic decision or reality, whereas the Gemara's means of arriving at psak halacha, as the Tziv says, are hidden to us. The Gemara does have a shakl v'taya, a give and take, a dialectic, but the Gemara clearly is directing this dialectic to what it feels to be the halacha. Either there is a practice, a minig like that halacha, there's a Masora like that halacha, and that's what the Tziv says explicitly in his introduction to Ha'amik She'ela, when he says that the ways of Psak of Ravina Ravashi are hidden to us. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to go a little bit deeper into this, because in fact, actually, this constitutes a major topic, a central theme, without which one could have really, in my opinion, no understanding of the Masora, of the tradition of the Seer of Terah in Klal Yisrael. I'm sure that over the last 10 Shi'urim, many of you have been asking your questions, what is Masechah? There's no question about it, we're going to have to radically revise our understanding of Masechah, but Amit Hashem, I hope to present something which will fit in with the, with the text and the Gemaras and the Rishonim that are at our disposal. I'd like to go back a little bit to the concept of Torah Shebi'al Peh. I know this is the 11th shiur, and perhaps I should have began the first shiur with this, but in the words of the Rambam, in chapter, I think, 72 in the first Chalik HaBari Nebuchim, one should first know the facts and then create a theology, not first create a theology and then know the facts. So I think over the last 10 shiurim, we've created a lot of facts. Of course, these facts are not historical facts in an objective sense, but rather are the textual truths, which form the basis of, of the Torah HaMasura Lanu from the Tanaim of Ohayim and the Rishonim. But in any case, these are the facts that any Orthodox Jew has to, clearly confront us. And the question is, how do we make sense? How do we understand these things? So what I'd like to do is I'd like to actually go into the very notion and concept of Teresh, the oral law, and perhaps we, based upon this, we can build and establish a framework that will help us to understand all the different things that we've seen and we've learned about and interpreted over the last 10 lectures. Now, the Rambam, it's always nice to go back to the Rambam. The Rambam tells us in his Hakdamah to the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam says, "Kol ha-mitzvah shenitnu le-moshe b'sinai v'peirushim nitnu." In other words, all the mitzvahs were given with interpretation, with commentary, necessary commentary. And this is obviously given from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shenemar, the Rambam brings the famous pasuk of the Parsha Mishpatim, "Ve'edna lecha es luchas ha-evim v'terah ha-mitzvah," and the Rambam somehow quotes, I should say he summarizes, the Gemara in Brochos, which says, "Terah zu torah shebichsav, mitzvah zu peirushim." And the Rambam says, goes on and says, that Kol HaTorah Kasu Moshe Rabbeinu, Kodim Shiyamus, in other words, the entire Torah was written by Moshe Rabbeinu before he dies, B'Ksav Yodai, V'Nosan Sefer L'Chol Shevet V'Shevet, he gave a Sefer to every Shevet. V'Sefer Echad Nosno Ba'aron Le'ev. One Sefer Torah placed in the Aron is an Eid, it's a testimony. Sh'nema L'Koyach HaSefer HaTorah Azeh V'Santa Moisei. And the Perush HaTorah gave to the Zkenim, to Yeshua, Shalko Yisrael, and then the Rambam goes on in his famous Hakdamah and gives all the Bati Dinim, the the Mesilas HaTeira, the Mesilas HaTeira from every generation, the transmission of Teresh Be'al Peh, that is, in fact, certainly, when there was a Beis HaMikdash, that was the Sanhedrin HaGadol. So the Rambam says, Hilchos Mamrim, that all of Teresh Be'al, all of Teira, Ki Metzion Teitzei Seira, all Teira came from. And even after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, it's smashed with the Rambam that the every generation had a Sanhedrin, the Rambam listed to Rav Yehuda Rav Ashi. And there's a famous deal of the Rambam, whether Lo Yisos applies only to the Sanhedrin, the Beis HaMikdash applies to every generation until Rav Yehuda Rav Ashi, and in the Hilchos Mamrim, it's smashed one way, and HaKdam is smashed another way. I don't want to go into the different Pilpulim, or the different Shitas, but in any case, it's clear that in every generation, there's a Beis Din, which adjudicates the Teresh Be'al Peh. Now, I want to raise a very, very basic question, which I'm sure that, you know, some of you have thought about. Why do we need a Teresh B'Ksav and a Teresh Be'al Peh? In other words, why wasn't everything written down? Or why wasn't everything oral? Why do we need a Teresh B'Ksav and a Teresh Be'al Peh? Now, what's interesting is that the Rambam, invokes a medrash, the medrash in Devarim Rabbah, that a Sefer Torah was given to every Shevet. He not only wrote one Sefer Torah, he gave a Sefer Torah to every Shevet. Every Shevet got his own Sefer Torah. So what was put in the Aron? But Torah should be al peh, the oral law. There's one Beis Din l'chol Yisrael. The Rambam doesn't list several Batei Dinim for every Shevet. There's Rashi of the Rambam, there was one Beis Din l'chol Yisrael from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until Rav Yehuda Rav Ashi. Sof Ma'atike, Torah should be al peh. In other words, the Torah Shabbat is given to everybody. Everybody has a Shulchan Shal Shabbat, I don't know what they have. Torah Shabbat was given to everybody. The Torah Shabbat, Torah Shabbat is one Beis Din. But that's part of the question. Why is there a Torah Shabbat and a Torah Shabbat? Why one oral, why one written? And the Rambam says the oral is given to the Sanhedrin, to the Gedolei HaDor in every generation. Teresh B'Ksav is given to every Shevet. So I want to answer with the following thing. And I think it's clear in the Rambam, the Teresh B'Ksav never changes. That's clear. It's one of the ikum of the Rambam. The Teresh Be'al Peh of Halacha, of the Rambam says, which are called Halachas Mekubalot, which is probably referring to, right, when he speaks about HaTeira V'Hamitzvah, which is given to Moshe Rabbeinu, Halachas Mekubalot, which speaks about the Hakdamah, right, the Shavuot Sheni, right, never changed. And it could possibly mean when he gave the Teresh B'Ksav to every Shevet, he also gave them the Halachas Mekubalot. What about the other Chelek of Teira? The Drashas, which the Rambam clearly says in Hakdamah several times, in Shavuot Sheni, and in Hilchos Mamrim, the Rambam says that a one succeeding Sanhedrin can overturn a drosh of a previous Sanhedrin, even if it's not Gol B'chachma V'Minyan. I mean, that constitutes the bulk of Teresh Be'al Peh. Now, what about that? So I want to claim the following thing. That's the part of Teresh Be'al Peh that changes. In every generation, the Chachamim use their authority to douse it, to take out halachas through the drashas, through the Yud Gimel Ikrim, of the Teresh Be'al Peh. I mean, the takanas exist too, they can make new takanas. That's a little bit more difficult to overturn. But in other words, clearly, the Teresh should be al peh in the view of the Rambam, and this is, you don't need the Rambam for this, we see this in history, the Teresh should be al peh is something which is changing in every generation, according to the Rambam, very, very much so. Something which is fixed, Teresh should be al-Ksav, is written down. Something which is changed is not written down. It doesn't make sense to write it down. Because in every generation is going to change. In other words, why do we need a Teresh Be'al Peh? The Teresh Be'al Peh represents that aspect of Torah, right? Which we should say is subject to change and different expression in every generation. That has to be kept oral. Once I write it down, it can't change anymore.
So why were the Perushim and Mekubalim and the Halacha of Moshe Messina not written down? That doesn't change.
That's a good question. It could possibly be that's a dogma. In other words, that began the Teresh Be'al Peh, and from that you get, in other words, it could possibly be that formed the basis of what we understand to be Teresh Be'al Peh. In other words, In other words, that's to give us a basis that there exists a Teresh Bapemi Sinai, and that was somehow the, what was revealed at Sinai. But what I'm saying is that, in other words, what I'm saying is that there's a very, very practical, rational reason why the Teresh Bapemi, why there had to be a Teresh Bapemi. If Judaism is to survive throughout all the generations and survive with Das Torah in every generation, there has to be an ability, right, to, you know, to be able to daushin in every generation, make takanas in every generation. This is something which can't be written down, because obviously it has to be fluid.
Are these referring to applications or fences as opposed to changing the base of
No, the drushes can change too. And according to the Rambam, the drushes can change too. A Sanhedrin can overturn a drush, a previous Sanhedrin, through using the Gibbalikrim. The Rambam says it explicitly in Perek Beis. Okay, so like this. Now what we have is, we have, number one, why do I need an oral law? I need an oral law, because without an oral law, we can't survive in history. An oral law is what gives the Torah the ability to survive, or, in other words, to apply itself in over time, over history. It has to be oral. It has to be subject, it has to be fluid, subject to change. Once you write something down, it's not going to change anymore. What do we need a Torah Shavuksav? I mean, the Torah, there has to be a Torah Shav, because the Torah Shavuksav is what connects every Jew. Every Jew is a vot on Chumash. You know, but the Torah Shavuksav is the individual connection of every Jew with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, even if he's not a big Talmud Chacham. That's the Torah Shavuksav. But the Torah Shavuksav, the Halacha, which has to, and somehow pronounce and express itself in every generation, that's oral, because that might change. Now, that's the kudah number one. Point number one. Yeah.
You're saying halacha has nothing to do with Torah Shabbat?
No, halacha is all Torah Shabbat. I mean, it might be Dalshim Torah Shabbat, but I can change the drosha according to the Rambam in every generation.
So therefore there's no connection.
Right, everything's Torah Shabbat. Now.
So in other words, if it went for the Hamaynam, if we were just all...
I think why my opinion is the Yikah Chumash is really probably, in other words, Chachamim create the Torah Shabbat Peh. The Chumash is basically for, you know, for on Shabbos, a good vort, the Ishiyah Nevi'im, this and that.
So if we're all Talmidei Chachamim and didn't need, I mean, Be'etzim we could live quite happily without the Torah Shabbat Peh.
Look, ultimately, the Torah Shabbat Peh, I can't talk about Sab, but I'm saying that the Yikah we follow is the Torah Shabbat Peh, not Torah Shabbat Peh. I mean, the Gemara says, Chosh Baruch was Kairos Bris, only other Torah Shabbat Peh, not Torah Shabbat Peh. I mean, exclusive to Klal Yisrael. I don't want to go away. We can live with it. I mean, this is important. We live with it. We obviously we need Torah Shabbat. But I'm saying
I mean,
is
if we wouldn't have what would we
no because
we live important Shabbos Seder.
No. But it's very important because every Jew's connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the connection, the spiritual connection, for the Hashkafa connection, and also it comes from the Torah Shabbat. That's for sure. In other words, my connection, in the case of every Jew on his spiritual level, comes with Torah Shabbat. But the legal aspect, the legal framework, right, is certainly through the Torah Shabbat Peh.
But the drushes are really, you're just implying the drushes are not coming from Torah Shabbat Chassav.
I didn't say that, no. There's nothing I said when I implied that.
Okay.
When I said that,
if we didn't have Torah Shabbat Chassav, would we still have the drushes?
Chas v'shalom, how can we remove so that bush? I didn't imply that at
so
all.
So we have no halacha with no Torah Shabbat Chassav then?
No, once again. We have halacha, the drushes are coming from Torah Shabbat Chassav.
Right.
But in every generation, the drushes can be different. That's what the Rambam says. So I need the Torah Chassav to derive the halachas.
Right.
So, but that Torah Shabbat is produced from the Torah Shabbat Chassav. I didn't say that. However, what? That Torah Shabbat which comes from Torah Chassav changes every generation. So the Torah Shabbat has to be kept oral. But the Torah Shabbat, there has to be a Torah Shabbat to generate Torah Shabbat.
Right.
But in addition to that, why is a Torah Shabbat, well, besides that too, the Torah Shabbat serves as the source of Torah Shabbat, but why is it given to every Shevet? The Rambam mentions given to every Shevet. The Kabbalah says every Shevet has different shares to Shama. What the Rambam is saying is that there's a chelik of Torah given to every Jew when he has the individual connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And nothing to do with Halacha, because Halacha is only decided by the Sanhedrin. But the Jew's spiritual connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu comes from the Torah Shabbat itself. And that's why a Shevet is given to every Shevet. Is that clear?
Yeah, I mean, there's also one that's in the Aaron.
Because you have to make sure that no one forges the other ones.
Rovitz makes it sound as though the Torah Shabbat is just incidental to Judaism.
No, I didn't say that.
But really, it's the foundation of Torah Shebaal Peh as well.
I understand that. I'm asking a different question. I'm not coming to say who's more important, Torah Shebaal Peh or Torah Shebaal Kesavah. I'm coming to answer a very simple question.
Your personal connection to Torah.
Why do I need a Torah Shebaal Peh and a Torah Shebaal Kesavah? That's my question. So the answer is, that why is the Torah Shebaal Peh oral? Torah Shebaal Kesavah is written. Why didn't I written oral Torah? So what I'm saying is I need a written Torah. Why do I need a written Torah? They didn't. The purpose of the written Torah is, first of all, every Jew has to have a connection, his own connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, which can only come from a written Torah. Not every Jew is capable of, you know, of being mechadish in Torah Shebaal Peh. In other words, law is made. Law has to be universal. My spiritual connection has to be a personal connection. That I get through Torah Shebaal Kesav. In addition, the Torah Shebaal Kesav generates Torah Shebaal Peh. Right. So in other words, I need Torah Shebaal Kesav for two reasons. I need it to get my personal connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, like. That's how we give a Sefer Torah. And I also need the Jared Torah Shebaal Peh. But why is the Torah Shebaal Peh oral? Why is it oral? Because that has to change. If it doesn't change, if it's written, it won't change. Is that clear? Yeah.
The Rav's coming from the Rambam's understanding. According to the Kiddush of the Dosh Rishonim,
well, forget about the Dosh Rishonim.
I just want to ask, I have to forget about him, but...
It's everything wrong.
Is he basing that on any Rishon? In other words, other than the Rambam, is the Dorosh Rishonim coming from a position?
What Dorosh Rishonim?
The idea that the droshes are not mechadish anything; they're just coming to bolster existing halachas that are just coming down, not changing. Is there anyone else who says that, or is the Rambam really the only Rishon who talks about this?
Yeah, the Dorosh Rishonim is very, very look. The Dorosh Rishonim could be speaking about mekayos. I'm not sure the Dorosh Rishonim agrees that everything is mamash halachas must be seen. Now, I'm not sure he'll say like that. That's number one. So someone must have mechadish halachas. Dorosh Rishonim is just saying that the Mishnayos are all the Mesovos that we have, maybe from Chekhes and Gedolah.
Okay.
But I don't think Dorosh Rishonim is claiming that every single Mishnah comes from Lachal Moshe B'Sinai. So even he's going to have to be moved to that too, in addition to the Kodos and Gzeilos. Okay, fine. This is clear. Now, second thing which is important. Right? Why does a Torah Shechsav and Torah Shebaal Peh? Like this. To say a vote at the Shabbos table, everyone can say a vote. Our kids, Yama, oh, it sounds good. Everybody has connection with the Torah. To make law, the law can only be made by the Gedolim in every generation. Once I write down the Torah Shebaal Peh, then the law now does not become the exclusive in the domain of those people who are most qualified to make the law. In other words, like this. If I write down the Torah Shebaal Peh, then every Am HaOretz will darshan the Torah Shebaal Peh and become a poisek. Why not? It's written in English, art's grown. The purpose of Torah Shebaal Peh was to give exclusive, right, exclusivity to those people in every generation, the Sanhedrin, the Gedolim, who are most qualified to adjudicate Jewish law. So therefore, right, what I want to say is that why do we need a Torah Shebaal Peh, right? Torah Shebaal Peh, we agree we need. Why we need a Torah Shebaal Peh? For two reasons. Number one, the Torah Shebaal Peh allows the type of fluidity and flexibility that's needed for the Torah, for the eternity of the Torah. That the Torah can, you know, direct itself and direct Klal Yisrael through every generation. And secondly, the orality of the Torah ensures that only those people who are best qualified to adjudicate halakhic issues will be able to adjudicate it. If everything is written down, every Abbas can look at a Mish, look at a Gemara, and Paschal and Shaila. Why not? It's in English. It's written down.
Richard is making a tie on anyone who writes down their tshuva.
This is afterwards. Although there was a big machlokes over the Shulchan Aruch. Don't think there wasn't a machlokes. It was a machlokes of Art Scroll too. But okay, I want to go further. Okay, now. Okay, so in other words, the only thing I'm trying to communicate is that orality is central to the entire enterprise. It's central. It has to be oral. In other words, there has to be part of it which is bichsav. Because every person has to have his connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, his connection with spirituality. It has to be something that generates the Torah Shebaal Peh. But orality is central to the halakhic process in Judaism. Once something is written down, then, in fact, number one, I might not have the ability of flexibility, which is ingrained in the very process of Sanhedrin, as the Rambam details this in Mamrin. It cannot be halachas that mischata should have a generation, like the Rambam says, both in Rambam, both in Hakdamah. And number two, the religion could be taken over by the barbarians. Okay, so orality is central in the Jewish religion. Okay, now, and hence we have, not only does the Gemara say in several places, right, that the Gemara says in Gittin, right, Devarim should be alpeh, yet Rosh HaKosvim. In fact, it's not only a little iser. We see that Chazal, in fact, spoke very, very strongly against people who write down Torah Shebi'al Peh. So therefore, if I could quote from the Gemara in Daf Yudalim and Bezen Tamura, Omer Rab Yechanan Kois V'Halachas Kaseyah Fatera. Whoever writes halachas like he's bearing the Torah. V'Haloman Mehem, whoever teaches from them, Einu Noitel Schar, this is going to be Schar. Dosh Rab Yehuda Benachmoni, Miturgen Neder Ishlokish, one says, Kolok Zadu Ma'ela, right? And he says, Tami Shmoel, Ksoiv lechaz adu ma'ela, Eila takosiv, Aval Eila takosiv halachas. You can't learn halachas. I mean, Chazal were very, very strong that people who write down the Torah Yopeh, in fact, actually, it's Ksoiv of HaTorah, destroying the Torah. And the other Pesukim, write this, but don't write that. The Gemara doesn't get to the summer, because Bob was only Kurdish priest on Torah Yopeh. In other words, very strong, very strong. Interesting enough is, where do we see Kaseg of Torah? Taisvis and Chavav and Beis. It brings up some insight. It brings up Shalmi, that the woman wanted to learn Torah. And I think what the Tanaim says is better you should burn the Torah than give it to women. In other words, I want to say a little bit the same thing here too. You write down the Torah, you're giving it to women. I don't want to. Chas v'shalom, I'm not coming to.
Should I thin this bit out of the table?
What?
Should I cut this bit out of the
table? No, it's okay, fine. You're giving it to the women. Women is a halachic, it's a briska woman. Whereas a man can also be a briska woman.
Please,
I mean, whatever.
No. For the viewers at home,
no!
What you're talking about.
Okay, fine, yeah. No. Oh, so very, very good. Now, so in other words, it's central to turn it. Why would Chazal say so strongly about these things? Because they felt that the Torah, right down the Torah, was basically giving it to the dogs. Throwing it to the dogs.
Women are dogs.
No, it's a brisket dog. Okay, fine, now. Okay, now, with this, I want to raise now an interesting question. Okay? Okay, but this is clear. Orality is central. Central, mommy central. I know we never thought about it like this, but orality is central. Okay, now.
We see that it works.
What?
We see that it works. I mean, that it's good for centralizing it, but who says that had to be that way? Meaning.
Okay, but it makes sense. I don't know. The Rosh Hashanah can't tell you, but I think if you want something to be flexible and something to be located, concentrated in a certain body, making it oral certainly helps matters. Okay, now like this. Let's go further. When was the Torah Shebi'al Peh written down? This is a very good question.
So when Rabbi says it's written down, you mean in a canon, in a text.
In a canon,
because
right.
Everyone understands that it was always written down privately for now.
The Rambam says like that, and the Gemara is like that. That's a big. That's a big. The Megillah's tainus, but the Megillah, but that was a very exceptional. I want to let's forget about the little letters and probably read down. What was written as a canon that was available? Now, this question has a very long history. In fact, actually. In the Igeres of Shriya Gaon, which I have with me, but I'm not going to open it up because I think right? Actually, I mentioned that there are two versions of the Igeres. There's the Nusach Sfarad, the Spanish version, and there's the Nusach Tzofas, which is the French version. Now, in the Nusach, in the Spanish version, it seems to be indicated that the Torah that the Mishnah was written down in the time of Rebbe. That seems to be the indication. It's much a little bit like that. It's much like that in the Rambam, in the Hagdama. You know, I'm going to speak about this a little bit. Sajigun is much like this too. However, in the French edition, it's not much but all that was written down. On the contrary, it's much but wasn't written down. And in fact, Rishonim, Rashi, the Smag, the Ramban, the Milchemes, the Ritvor, etc., etc., all held that the Mishnah was not written down during Rebbe's time. In fact, the Smag actually makes a claim that the Gemara and the Mishnah was only written down first in the 8th or 9th century. Now, I would like to quote, there are perhaps 10 or 11 Rashis and Shas, which indicate clearly that the Mishnah was nothing was ever written down during the Amoraim, not even a Mishnah. I want to quote from Rashi. Rashi says, the Gemara in Elevin, Samach Beis Amid Beis, Folio 62, Side B in the Article Edition, speaks about a question, can a person be Meira Halacha, can a person rule on a Halacha, like in the presence of his Rebbe, or within a certain proximity of his Rebbe? The Gemara discusses that issue. So, what types of issues can be ruled? So Rabbi Yankel Bar Abba says to Abaye, can go in Megillas Tainus. Why? Because the Chesiva Umancha. In other words, it's written down. Says Rashi, why did the Gemara pick Megillas Tainus? So Rashi says, right, the Gemara picked Megillas Tainus. Why? Right? Says Rashi, why did it pick this? Shalom heist nokat Megillas Tainus. The Gemara used Megillas, Rabbi Ben Yankov used the example of Megillas Tainus. Shalom heist a Devah Halach Suva Beneyem, Yameyem. There was no Devah Halacha written during the time of all the Amorayim. Afilo ois achas, even one letter. Masha the Rashi is going out of his way to make this a very strong point. Chutz Megillas Tainus. And this is Rashi to Rav Chas, Lama Gilmon Beis, the Rashi we spoke about in the Mishnah, about Metzila, Lama Gilmon Beis, Rashi to Rav Chas. In fact, in the Smag, like I said before, the Smag in the Sagdama seems to indicate that nothing was written down until about the 8th century, 8th, 9th century. So, and there's a very famous Perush on the Smag of Isaac Stein. And in fact, he has a beer on the Smag, and in the Smag HaSholem, which came out a few years ago, they included a beer he has on the Hagdama, which wasn't in previous editions. And Rabbi Isaac Stein is, I think, either if not a Rishon, a very early Achrayim. Rabbi Kiva Eger brings him in Shulchan Aruch. And Rabbi Isaac Stein has a long kodris in which he claims that Chas V'Sholem, the Mishnah, was never written down. Not only during Rebbe's time, it was never written down during the time of the Gemara, but it was written down afterwards. He wants to claim it was written down maybe, in other words, certainly, because it was probably written down certainly after Avashi, maybe during the time of, at least Rabbanu Samarai. And this is the position of Rashi, like I said, Rabbi Isaac Stein, the Smag, the Ritvor, the Ramban, and the Melchemes, and Perek Gimel, and Brochais, v'chule, v'chule. Now, like I said before, this issue, which actually seems to divide a little bit Ashkenazim and Sfardim, though it's not true, because the Ramban was a Sfardi, and so was the Ritvor, I think, but they hold like Rashi. Right. But what's interesting is that we know that there are two versions of Moshe Rabbeinu's letter, and it's emerged in this century that it appears that the French version is the most accurate version. In other words, the French version appears to be the original version. The Spanish version seems to have actually been copied from the French version with some changes. So, in other words, if we accept what seems to be the consensus of many people that the French version is the more accurate version, then it will come out that halacha lemaisa, we have to accept the fact that the Mishnah, in fact, was not written at all, neither during the time of Rabbi, nor was it existed in any state written during the time of the Gemara. And even though the Rambam seems to indicate it was written, Rabbi Isaac Stein, if you look through Rabbi Isaac Stein's long shtickle Torah there, you will see very clearly that Rabbi Isaac Stein says that's not the pshat of the Rambam. The Rambam understood that Rabbi was machaber the Mishnah, made into a canon, but didn't write it down. Now,
does this impact on Chisurim Echser, or are we still going to say Chisurim Echser is just there are oral things which need to be written?
Right. But like this, So what we're dealing with is, now, based upon what I'm saying, that orality is central to the process of Torah Sh'bal Peh, in my opinion, this is a consequence of this. In other words, if orality is so central, then we expect the Chazal to have in fact actually continued the oral process as long as possible. Until, for whatever reason, which we'll speak about in Mitzvah Sham, you know, later on in history, you know, the Mishnah and the Gemara were both written down. But the fact is that, now, there's a big, what am I saying this for? I'm saying for this, is that what we have to understand, right? What we understand is a very important thing. When we read a Gemara, this is really the nafgamina here. In other words, this is really where we have to really sit here and deliberate over things. When we read a Gemara, we're not reading something, we're not reading a text that people said things and wrote in a text. What we're reading is there was a oral culture, an oral transmission over hundreds and hundreds of years. And we're reading someone's, what we're doing is we're reading someone wrote the text of the Gemara was established hundreds of years after all these discussions took place. Now, Chas v'Shalom, the Gemara is absolutely accurate. I don't doubt the accuracy for one second, not like other people do. But the fact is that we believe, as part of our Amun and Tosha Peh, that the Gemara is accurate. But we understand this, the Gemara was written down after all these, many hundreds of years after these discussions took place, were transmitted orally, and the Gemara was written down. In other words, it's not like you read an author, and the person has a thought, and then writes it down. We're talking about that the person said something orally, and it was passed on orally, and then after five generations, someone wrote it down. Which means that when I said it, the text of the Gemara cannot really reflect the context in which I said it. Because, in other words, the text of the Gemara might reflect the statement that I made accurately, 100%. But, when I said the thing, I was thinking in my head of all the reasons I had, and I said this, but the Gemara is not going to, you know, record every reflection and every nuance in my thinking. This is very, very important. Why? Because now what I want to do is, I want to go back to that Netziv. The Netziv says that the Dauki Ha'ira of Avinu Ravashi, which means the Gemara, the Avinu Ravashi, are hidden, are sozim to us. Why is that true? When I learn a Rashba, when I learn a Ritva, right? When I learn a Beis Yosef, the Dauki Ha'ira are not hidden to me. How come Ravina of Ashi is hidden to me, and the Rashba is not hidden to me? The Rashba in the Tekes Abayis goes through a whole Mahalech, how he's paskening. I can see every nuance of what he's saying. How come Ravina of Ashi is hidden from me, the Rashba is not hidden from me? The answer is very pushing. Ravina of Ashi, when I was sitting and writing down what they were thinking, it was recorded hundreds of years after that. The Rashba is sitting and thinking and writing at the same time. He's telling you everything he's thinking. In other words, you're following the Mahalach Machshavas of the Rashba. Not only that, there's a second thing too, which is important. The Rashba had in front of him everything that I have in front of me. He had a Gemara, he had a Tosefta, he had the Ramban, he had the Tosfos, he had the Rashi. The Rashba can point here, there, there, there. This is the way I'm understanding it. Who is Rav Ashi pointing to? He's not showing us what he has. It might be that he might bring someone and interpret it, but we don't have in front of us anything that Rav Ashi had. In fact, it didn't exist. It was all oral.
So when we talk about Rav Ashi editing the Gemara, and the Gemara is quite carefully structured. There is a clear structure there with kashas and trutzim, etc.
That's true. We've spoken about that for less than shiur.
Correct. So,
but what
wasn't done in a way which was textualized. Somehow
it was aura.
Why is it so perfect?
Oh no.
If it was recorded 300 years later.
No, I want to go a bit further. I'll go further. I haven't reached my main point now. I just want to say that, in other words, one of the reasons the Gemara seems so distant to us, so close to us, is because, in other words, the Gemara is not reflecting a text, it's reflecting an oral culture. There's the impasse between what you call a textual culture and an oral culture. Now, I want to go deeper though. What's the difference between orality and textualism? Is that a new word, textualism? Textuality. At least it rhymes, orality and textuality. What's the difference? I claim there's a difference between the two things. Okay, Herz Chaim. There's a difference between orality and textuality. I claim when things are oral, my thought process is different than when things are textual. How so? I'll tell you how so. When things are oral, ultimately, most of the thinking is coming from within me. It might be that, in other words, there are oral traditions and transmissions which I'm assimilating, but since in an oral tradition, there's no objective text, it's only me, the person. So, my thoughts, my ideas, my way of looking, particular way of looking at things, is central. And everything else, the whole textual tradition, of which I'm part of, somehow, it all has to pass through me and somehow be, in other words, be filtered through my particular ideas. In other words, in an oral tradition, things come from within to without. So, and let me tell you something. Rabbi said, this is called Maseira. This is called Nevuah. It's very interesting that in Shas, in the Gemara, there's a very, very strong connection between Nevuah and Maseira. As Hillel Tess says in Sabbath Vavim and Aleph and Psachim, Emeinam Nevi'im B'nei Nevi'im. They weren't Nevi'im at that time. But what makes Maseira similar to Nevuah? What makes orality similar to prophecy? Everything comes from within to without. In other words, orality is a process in which the specific dimension and the outlook of the person is playing the role which is filtering the oral tradition. Now, by the way, Derech Agav, that's the reason why an oral tradition has to go through Gedolim. That's called Das Torah. Das Torah is the Das of the Gadol, which filters Torah knowledge and arrives at a halakhic conclusion. In a textual culture, it's different. In a textual culture, the information, in oral culture, the information has to toe the line to me, because it comes from within to without. In a textual culture, it's just the opposite. I have to toe the line to the text. I have to interpret the text. I have to resolve different texts. In other words, there's an objective world, right? Which I'm beholden to. It's very interesting. Those of you who are listening to the Shi'urim on the Melech Nevuchim, which I'm giving at the same time, not the same day, but in whatever sense the internet is contemporary, we've been speaking about cosmological proofs and ontological proofs. And there's a very interesting difference between the two types of proofs. An ontological proof is my own thoughts, my own definitions, and creating my own definitions, and basically proving things on the basis of these definitions. In other words, an ontological proof is the way I look at things. In other words, I think of an idea, I construe an idea, and I prove the idea must be true. it comes from me. My idea of God implies there has to be God. It's an ontological proof. Cosmological clues comes from without. I look at the world, and I prove that the world must have been created. I'm looking for history. I'm looking for sources. And an ontological proof, there's no source. I'm the source. My idea of God has to exist. The source is coming from within me. In a cosmological proof, the source comes from outside of me. I look at the world, and I somehow induce or deduce there must be a creator. Something created the world. In other words, the difference between ontological proofs and cosmological proofs is in a certain sense very parallel to the difference between what I would call a oral culture, orality, and textuality. Now, what do we have? We have something very interesting. Orality ended, in a certain sense, with the Gemara. Orality ended with the Gemara. The shock of the Torah, the give and take of the Gemara, is really, in a certain sense, an oral give and take. Which means that even though there's a dialectic, as we've seen in these Shi'urim, the dialectic is very, very directed. The dialectic, right, is not coming, in a certain sense, to objectively understand the meanings of certain statements, but the dialectic is expressing the Das Torah of the Gedolim in every generation, how they understood the tradition to bear upon the halachic issue they were deciding. That's what the dialectic is of the Gemara.
Unless you say that the Shakel of the Tari was written somewhat later, which we have been inclined to say.
No, but that's...
Or it was formulated later, it's close to when it was written.
But that's the Sabarayim, but that's the Das Torah of the Sabarayim, or of Ashik of Vida and the Sabarayim.
But aren't we saying that's when it was written?
But it ended there. It ended there. In other words, the Shakel of Italia of the Gemara represents an oral Shakel of Italia.
Right.
It's an oral Shakel of Italia. There's no text of Rabbi Yechanan, of Rav and Shmuel, of text. There's no text of anything. The Shakel of Italia is the mindset of the Das, of Ravida, Rav Ashi, whoever came afterwards, how he understood that the Torah will rule on this specific matter. So it's not an objective, scientific, or scholarly resolution of texts. It's the Das Torah of the Gedolim of that generation in an oral tradition. Masha Eken, when the Rashba looks at the Gemara, he has a Gemara, he has a Bavli, he has a Yerushalmi, he has a Tosefta, he has the Tosfos. The Rashba is coming. It's coming from without. The Rashba is coming to put together a theory which will resolve objective texts. The Rashba is coming to say, what do these texts mean? What does the Gemara mean? What does the Sefta mean? It's a totally different thing. That's called textuality. So now, what we have here is very, very interesting. Those of you who, through these 10 lectures, have accused me of saying that the Shakel of the Torah of the Gemara was somehow concocted and synthesized, you're right, it was. Because that's what's called Messiah in an era of Torah Shebi Alpeh Pshuta Kamashmo. That's the way it works.
It's like the Abishal Salanta's Libi Oimeli on the Rosh.
But that's what it is. But it's not, the Shakel of Italia is not coming from a resolution, a general resolution of texts. It's a filtering of the dialectical reasoning of the Gadol. He's filtering the oral tradition and making it bear upon the specific halachic issue. The way he looks at it, his bent, his point of view, that's what's talking about the Matzik et Torah Shebi'al Peh.
Is there any objectivity to it?
There's always objectivity, but like it's like everything. In other words, Shneim Mishtamshim Bilbuvya.
Objectivity.
There is an objectivity, right, yeah. But what, in other words, however, right? Once the Gemara is written down, and everything is written down, then man doesn't create the text. Man is beholden to the text. Then there has to be, in a certain sense, a much more textual answer, and that's how these happens. Now, so really, what have I shown you just now? What have we proven over the last 11 children? We've proven the Messiah. I've proven you there's a Messiah. Things that can be proven don't need a Messiah. You can prove them. I've proven you the Messiah. But the Messiah, well, we understand Messiah. Te'er should be al peh. Pshut ha'kam ha'shmo ends with the Chesimus HaShas. And I claim that crucial to this Messiah is the fact that it was oral. It was oral. And that's how I understand the Shita of Rashi, the Ritva, the Ramban, the Smag of Isaac Stein. And more so. The Emerson was oral. The Mishnah was oral. The Gemara was oral. The Tosefta was oral. It was all oral. It's interesting, right? Is that we gave an example from the Gemara and Temura with the Mishnayos and Mikvois. It's interesting that clearly we have Gemara only on four stories. In other words, we have Gemara on Noshim Nezikin, Mayed, and on Baruchos, Talmud Bavli. Talmud Yerushalmi, we have Zerayim. Oh, we have on Kachim. No, it's Kachim, Noshim, Nezikin, Mayed, right? And we have on Baruchos too. Basically on four stories.
And Nida. The Baruchos and Nida.
Nida, right. Okay, right. In other words, on Tyrus, we don't have any Gemara. Even though if you take Tyrus and Zerayim, that constitutes the majority of Mishnayos. I think Tyrus is the majority of Mishnayos in Shas. No, there's no Gemara on Tyrus, except for Gemara and Nida and Yerushalmi on Nida too. Zerayim, there's Yerushalmi on Zerayim, but there's no Bavli on Zerayim. It's interesting. The interesting question is, what are the Gemaras, and they were lost to us, or they were never, in fact, actually, they were never. I mean, for sure, the Amorayim were Baki, Bechol, Shisa Sidra, that's the late Ban Napoleon that you can see from the Shas. The Rishonim said like this. The question is, was there a Gemara on Tyrus, which somehow, I don't say it was lost, but, somehow just didn't make it? Or could it be that, in fact, actually, that, even though the Tanai and the Amorayim learned Tyrus, nonetheless, there was never a Gemara that was constructed on these things? Now, the fact is that, in my opinion, the Torah we have is Torah Shlema. Namely, even though they learned Tyrus, they were bucking all Mishnayos of Tyrus, what we consider the process of Talmud of Gemara, Gemara Arucha, in my opinion, never existed on Tyrus, and as far as the Bible is concerned, never existed on Zeroyim. I mean, this is a big issue which I don't want to go into right now. The only reason I'm bringing it is because there's a very there's a Gemara which actually we spoke about a while ago. The Gemara says in Chafu Ben Aleph and Brachos, what's the difference between Dorish Hashanim and Dorish Hachayinu? Dorish Hashanim concentrated their learning in Abba Sidre, whatever it is, the four Sidre. And in fact, when they came to a Mishnah Nutzen, they said, Havayis de Rabbi Shmuel, we have Tleisa Mesifta. So I saw that some scholars want to bring a raya from that from that we see that there must have been Gemaras on Tyrus, but in fact actually we don't have them. I claim that's not a raya. No. Tanuye means the Talmud, HaMasura B'Yadeinu, was on the Abba Sidre. They learned Uktzin, but they never developed a Gemara on Uktzin. That's how we could have 12 Tlasa Mesifta. They had a Messiah on the Abba, which we don't have. What we can do is we have Mishnayos and Tyrus from which we can create Shaka Vitalia in the intextuality. In other words, basically, what I want to say is that we see clearly is that in the Abba store of the Gemara, there was Messiah as opposed to in Tyrus, there wasn't a. I mean, there was. They learned it, but we didn't have a Gemara store that we have that we can call this type of Messiah. Yeah.
So, with this thesis, basically, the Rav's saying is that up to the end of the Chesimus HaShas, there was an orality, and the time of the Rishonim, there was a textuality. Would this explain why the Ga'onim maybe is a bit of a transition between an oral and
right.
textuals, so that we can't quite relate to it?
Right.
It's not what we have today.
Yeah, right. In fact, interesting enough is, I think I once saw. I think one of the Gaonim, maybe the Sadja Gaon, that in fact, actually, even if the Gemara was written, when they would teach it, they would teach it orally. In other words, even in the 10th century, when the Gemara, we still have manuscripts from the 10th century, I mean, the Goyim amazed that the text of the Gemara was written, but in the yeshivas, the Goyim, there was somehow teaching orally, which means you had this transition. It was only the Rishonim, right, the Rishonim came along, and in fact, actually, what they did was they, in a certain sense, they, in other words, somehow, they created a Shakalataga dialectic, the resolution of texts. In other words, textuality, in the sense of that, is really from the Talmud of Rishonim. That's clear. That's really clear. Okay, anyway, there's a lot to speak about here, but this is really only the beginning. Because now we can really understand the sugyas really, right, legufa. But in any case, this is the concept. This is the concept this is really the concept of Meseret Teshuva Peh. The Gemara says this concept of reconstructing, I mean, has its bekayos in Shas. I mean, the Gemara says that there were thousands in Tezayim and Aleph and Tevuah. The Gemara says there were thousands of halachas that were, you know, they were forgotten during the Avos Moshe Rabbeinu, Nosa B'Kanaz, was Machzim of the Hapilpo. Of course, that was oral too, but at least we see a concept that there's a, and I mean, the Siv, you know, brings up Gemara very, very beginning, that Das and Eish, that, you know, there is a concept of Das followed by Eish. But the fact is that here, it's much more, in my sense, much more pronounced. In other words, the gap, you know, the gap between the Gemara and the Rishonim, right, is really, in a certain sense, much deeper in that sense, because, in other words, we're speaking about a written versus an oral. The Gemara was speaking also Kanaz, it's still an oral Messiah. But, in other words, this is something which is, you know, very, very crucial and beneficial. And in my opinion, if we go back over the sugyas that we've even done already, we can even see a little bit. If you look at the Rishonim and the Achronim, right, you can see exactly how this process occurs. In any case, we're going to continue this in Mirat Hashem in much more depth, Mirat Hashem, in the next Shu'olim. I want to mention that since it's Chanukah, so therefore next week there will be no Shi'ur in the Chasimus HaShas. The Shi'ur will first be in 2 weeks from now, if time has any meaning in cyberspace. And in any case, I want to wish everybody a Freilich and a happy Chanukah. You'll have time to chazer over the shiurim. I really hope that people will send in their comments and criticisms. Ben Milch, I've read your comments. I put it somewhere. You have good questions. Mirat Hashem, I'm going to address you. And I really expect people to now to jump up and down, and everybody to, you know, to express his criticisms. And I know whether the internet's called Teresh Mechsav or Teresh Biyal Peh. Is it orality or textuality? But in this fiberality, right, we hope to be Magdal Terevi Yadil.